your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who've suffered the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. As always, the message is, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. If you're listening to our, well, of course you're listening to our show today, but our show is pre-recorded, so you won't be able to call in. But make sure you visit our blog, thegriefblog.com. We're still involved with our poetry contest, and we'll be reading some of the wonderful poetry that we're getting. And wonderful things are happening on the blog. We're getting a lot of comments on people's statements that they've written, and we've got some wonderful information on there. So we hope you go to the blog, and also remember that you can download our shows on iTunes, and the transcripts are available for the shows, and all of the shows are archived right there. We have over 100 shows archived on our website, thegriefblog.com. Well, Heidi, good morning. We've got an interesting topic today, don't we?
Yes, we do, and I'm looking forward to it because I don't think that in society it's addressed enough or it's talked about enough.
Yep, we're going to talk about prenatal loss. Before we get to the prenatal loss, I just wanted to tell people a little bit about what I'm doing today. You know, I run a Compassionate Friends group in Palo Alto, California, and one of our members' son was murdered. And so it's been 3 years, and she's dealing with court, so I'm going to try to get over there today and support her. It's finally coming to trial.
Oh, wow.
But it's so difficult, we know, for you folks out there who are involved in some kind of suits or thinking about it or whatever. It is extremely stressful.
I mean, I was going to say the stress you've got to be under during the trial and proceedings, all of that must be horrible.
Yeah, my friend was telling us that, telling our group that she, you know, had been waiting and for the trial to happen, and now that it's coming up, it's very difficult. So we wish all best to all of you out there who are making these kind of decisions and going through them. Well, Heidi, talk a little about prenatal loss. I know before we introduce our guest, Lena Kaplan, I know you've had some things go on recently related to that.
Well, yes. I teach at Columbia University. I teach graduate students in the School of Social Work, and I teach grief and loss. And last night, yesterday, we had a class. And we did this assignment where we all stood, I have 28 students, so there's 29 of us counting me. And we did this assignment where we all stand in a large circle, and then someone says something related to loss, and whoever can relate to that statement goes into the center and joins that person.
Hmm.
So I said, if anyone has had a sibling die, please step into the circle and join me. And nobody stepped in. Which is normal, because most people haven't had a sibling die, so it just reconfirms that all these years where I did feel alone, I was alone in many respects, because it's not a normative thing that happens in 2008, and it's not something that happens, you know, nowadays in the last 30, 40, 50 years with modern technology. So anyway, I'm standing by myself, and all of a sudden, a student, she's sitting there, and she's not sure if she should come into the circle. Well, for me, you've either had a sibling die or you haven't, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she's not sure if she should, because she kind of comes in a strange way, and she looks at me, and I looked at her, and I go, wow, I really feel like there's someone that can relate to my pain, and she starts to cry, and it was a very deep moment in the class. It was very moving for the class, and then she says, I don't know if I have the right to be here, and I really haven't had a sibling die, and I said, well, I'm not really clear on what you're saying, and she said, well, this is the first time I've ever claimed the loss because my brother, John, died at birth.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't feel like I have the right to claim it as my loss and as my brother dying because
that's incredible.
I never knew him.
Yeah, that's incredible because it gets us right into this whole idea of perinatal loss and when is a loss a loss. I know my brother, his wife had many miscarriages and had a child die at birth. And I don't think the family really ever came to terms with that. As a family, I don't think we gave them a lot of support. I'm not sure exactly what they did with it because I don't think we know, and that was many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting when you're not sure if it's your loss to claim.
Absolutely.
And as I told her, it is. He was your brother, and he's not in your life, and it absolutely changed the dynamics of your family and the way your parents parent. And you know what she said? She said, what's interesting is I didn't realize how much it affected me till I had my own kids. And when I was trying to decide how many children to have, I knew I was going to have more than one because children die.
Oh, very interesting.
Because that had not, you know, that had been her belief system, given that her brother had died.
Interesting how these things come back to impact us. Well, this would be a good time for you to introduce our guest, Linda Kaplan, on Perinatal Loss, because I'm sure that she's going to be able to talk to us and address some of the issues that we're talking about right now.
Okay, I'd be honored to. Our topic today is perinatal loss, and our guest is Lena Kaplan. Lena Kaplan is a licensed clinical psychologist practicing in Los Angeles. She specializes in infertility and perinatal losses. Her other areas of interest include the mind-body connection, creativity, and personal relationships. Dr. Kaplan teaches psychology graduate students at Pepperdine University and medical students at the Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Dr. Kaplan is a devoted tango dancer who has danced both in Los Angeles and Buenos Aires. Welcome to the show, Lena.
Thank you.
Hi, Lena.
For having me.
Great to have you on the show. I'm sure you must have related to what we were talking about, didn't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that I also was wondering about your student, whether she was one of the twins, but I guess she wasn't.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't a twin. She just had, well, it was her brother, and she never got a chance to see him,
mm-hmm.
and it was never talked about,
mm-hmm.
and she felt like if she told people in society, they'd think it was strange because she didn't know him.
Well, she's probably right in that mm-hmm. most people would regard it as rather strange. How can you mourn somebody that you actually never met?
Right.
And that's exactly the kind of statement that is being delivered or conveyed to many grieving parents of prenatal loss. Mm-hmm. How can you grieve a baby that you never really met?
Mm-hmm.
How can you really grieve somebody you never really had a relationship with or you haven't seen?
And we're really seeing them early now, aren't we, with the ultrasound. Well, listen, before we get totally into the topic, I wanted to ask you, how did you get in the field?
In the field of psychology or in the field of perinatal psychology?
Could be either.
I think one is more relevant, I think.
Uh-huh.
But perinatal loss has been really all around me, both professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. I think that in my practice, I've been working a lot with women and couples who very typically nowadays postpone having children until much later in life, until their career were in places where they were financially more secure. And at that point, they thought that they were ready, except that their bodies were not necessarily ready.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came as a shock to find out that actually the body is not with the program, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so many women find themselves more and more dealing with issues pertaining to fertility. I rather use fertility challenge than infertility because infertility implies some medical condition that is not necessarily
I like that reframe.
Yeah, the fertility challenge.
Yeah, and infertility since the old days has been associated with such, really since the biblical times with terms such as barren and wasted and desolate, and it mm-hmm. really doesn't help much when you think of yourself in those terms.
I like the idea of it being a challenge that people
can
work with.
It's absolutely a challenge.
Yeah. Well, I think, birth control pills have certainly changed things a lot and been able to allow people to delay much longer.
Right, and created, I think, in some ways, an illusion of a choice. And, yes, we do have a choice, but I think that women painfully finding out that at some point they no longer maybe have really a choice.
Right, and Lena, it's interesting to hear this because I have my own infertility story and I've had two miscarriages. And when I was almost 40, 39 years old, I went to my doctor and said, I'm trying to get pregnant with my second child and I can't. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. You're only 39.
Yes, and that's a very misinformed doctor.
Absolutely.
Yes, and in fact, nowadays, American Reproductive Association is trying to come up with different campaigns to truly educate women, college women and women in other settings, just about basics of your reproductive system.
Now, who's doing this?
The American Reproductive Medical Association.
Ah, the American Reproductive Medical Association.
Yes.
That's interesting. They're coming out to inform. Because I imagine there are some pretty angry women out
mm-hmm.
there
Absolutely.
That have been told that they could wait and,
right.
and now finding
was,
out that
right.
they can't. Were you angry, Heidi?
I was angry at my doctor because I did wait. I just didn't do anything. I didn't take any kind of action until I was in my, 40. And then I went to an infertility clinic, and they said, you know what, you should have come to us a year ago. You know, it's fine.
It's not and, earlier.
Yes. And,
yes.
and right when, I mean, you should have, you've delayed it. And then I had a couple of years of infertility treatments and was not able to get pregnant.
Yes. Now, we also need to keep in mind that perinatal loss happens independently of fertility or fertility-challenged issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can get pregnant, but they, for one reason or another, may not be able to carry the pregnancy to term, such as the case with a miscarriage,
mm-hmm.
or there is a genetic problem, or there is stillbirth, which really occurs in about 25,000 families a year.
Mm-hmm. 25,000. Wow.
25,000.
Wow.
And stillbirth can happen before delivery. We call it pre-delivery fetal death, or during delivery.
Now, what do you find out as far as trauma goes with people? Is there one that is most traumatic, or are you finding them all the same, or how does that work?
Well, I think that certainly the more there are medical complications, the more the situation is threatening the woman's health, the more the situation happens in a setting or in a context when she's not prepared, and there are, again, medical complications, certainly that immediately adds to certain trauma. So, for example, ectopic pregnancy is really life-threatening condition.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the embryo is actually in the fallopian tube
exactly.
and can burst
the egg lodges in the fallopian tube,
mm-hmm.
and she may not even know that she's pregnant.
Mm.
So,
and so? Mm-hmm.
And so if it bursts, it's really a life-threatening condition unless she can get to the hospital right away. So that certainly adds to certain trauma. Then in situations like stillbirth, a woman can go through a pregnancy that is normal and she feels good and she feels healthy, and then truly without a reason, there's about 70% of those cases where there's no any one good explanation as to really what happens, but the baby's heartbeat stops.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially she has to go through labor, induced mm-hmm. labor or regular labor, and essentially deliver a child who is no longer alive.
Wow, very, very difficult.
You can imagine that's traumatic.
Yeah. It's time for us to go to break, and when we get back from break, we're going to talk a little bit more with Lena Kaplan regarding prenatal loss. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. We hope that you will visit us at thegriefblog.com, and remember, all of our shows are archived on that site, and you can also download them on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010. That's 877-969-0010 to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child. This is Dr. Gloria Horsley telling you about CARA's Camp Erin. Camp Erin is coming to the Bay Area. It's for children 6 to 17 who are grieving the death of a child, a family member, or a friend. Funded by the Moyer Foundation, that's M-O-Y-E-R Foundation, the camp combines fun, high-energy activities with grief education and emotional support. The camp will take place May 16th through May 18th, 2008, at Camp Eraro in Livermore. There is no cost to families to participate. Applications are due by February 5th and can be found online by visiting www.cara-grief.org or by calling the CARA, that's K-A-R-A, office at 650-321-5272. That's 650-321-5272. You can also check out information about the camp at our blog, thegriefblog.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're here today talking with Dr. Lena Kaplan about perinatal loss. Lena is a licensed clinical psychologist practicing in Los Angeles. She specializes in infertility and perinatal losses. Dr. Kaplan teaches psychology graduate students at Pepperdine University and medical students at the Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Welcome back to the show, Lena and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lena and Heidi. I wanted to ask you, Lena, what's the biggest misconception that you find out there about perinatal loss?
The biggest misconception, and I'm putting it in a very general terms, is that it's not a loss.
Mm-hmm.
That, as I was saying earlier, and in relation to also the student that Heidi mentioned, that people have a tendency to minimize and to marginalize this loss because the assumption is, an erroneous assumption is, that the parents, the family, older siblings, grandparents, whoever might be in the family, has not yet developed a relationship with a real, quote, person.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about the husband and the wife? Is there any difference that you see between those two as far as the loss goes?
Yes, and I think that's another, I think, important point to make, which is, as with every grief, in this situation, too, people grieve differently. And oftentimes that may result in some difficulties in communication and in a relationship. But oftentimes the woman is having an experience that, even though both people had the experience of loss, she herself went through the physical experience of the loss that adds yet another dimension to her experience.
Mm. And there are all those hormones sloshing around, right?
Right.
And in addition to that, I'm thinking the woman, and I know this from being pregnant, we start developing bonds with our baby when we're pregnant.
Exactly. And if you're already at the point where you felt the baby in your body, certainly in a situation like stillbirth, that you actually gave birth to the baby, It's an experience that certainly adds yet another dimension to your loss.
Okay, now what I'm thinking about, Lena, is, so the woman has had this experience, but she has some medical people around her, or people know she's had the baby. They saw her physically pregnant and that kind of. What about the guy who just goes to work the next day or whatever,
I think he's not just goes to work. He goes to work in the absence of really being able to do anything else, because oftentimes the woman, in her sadness and her depression and her really very distraught place, shuts down and she goes into her very private place where she oftentimes either cannot be reached or feels she does not being understood, or she feels that she is the only one who truly suffered the loss and everybody else are only kind of bystanders to her experience.
I wondered, Heidi, did you think there was a difference between you and Marcus with that?
Absolutely, because I felt like from the minute I got that pregnancy test, and that's fairly, you can find out fairly quickly if you're pregnant nowadays, a few weeks after being pregnant, I started thinking about the baby, and you figure out when is the due date. I mean, you've got it. You've figured out everything. Mm-hmm. The minute you find out, you see that little blue line or purple pink line, you figured out when they're going to be born, what color you're going to paint the nursery. I mean, your mind starts creating another life, how many years apart your kids are going to be. So for me, it became very real, very much sooner. And I think the loss, for Marcus, it was a little bit more surreal because it was a miscarriage than it was for me. And like Lena said, so we grieved very differently.
But also, I have to say, Heidi, that in all fairness, we oftentimes don't quite give men the kind of support that they actually oftentimes need, and we expect them to be that rock upon which we can lean and depend on in times of stress and crisis. But in fact, as I said earlier, on a societal, cultural level, it's oftentimes being minimized.
I totally agree with
and
you.
And so it's also being minimized that the man had suffered the loss of the dream of his child.
Absolutely. And like you said, the men are not getting that recognition or that support.
Yes.
It's usually going to the women.
Absolutely. And also we want them, right, in some ways to be, somebody has to go to work, right? And somebody has to be strong, and somebody has to support us, and somebody has to still care for the older children, if they're older children in the family. So we put guys in kind of a double bind. We want them to be sensitive, and we want them to share our feelings, and we want them to be distressed over something as such as this profound loss. And at the same time, on some other level, they're getting the message that they are expected to be the strong one.
Right. It reminds me of Pat Loader, who's our executive director of Compassionate Friends. She had two children killed in an automobile accident, and those were their only children. And she was in the hospital because she was in the accident, too. And she just, kept making demands on her husband. She tells this story. And one day he came in and said, Pat, how can I send you a lifeline when I'm drowning?
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, I also mentioned to you that I found this loving poem on the Internet, and it's actually written by a man and dedicated to his wife. And I'm just wondering if that will be...
Yeah, would you like to read it to us?
Good...
How many lines is it?
Oh, gosh.
Is it long?
10 lines.
Okay, go ahead. Go for
it. Okay, so it's a poem written by Marcus Harvey, dedicating this to his wife, Laura, and the child who almost was.
Mm.
No one understands how we ache. We ache in our hands because we cannot hold you. We ache in our legs because we cannot stand for you. We ache in our feet because we cannot run to you. We ache in our shoulders because we cannot let you ride on them.
Yeah.
We ache in our knees because we cannot bounce you on them, and we ache in our eyes because we cannot see you. We ache in our ears because we cannot hear you. We ache in our minds for the void you left behind. Lastly, we ache in our hearts because it is torn in two.
That's wonderful. Yeah. We should... where did you get that off the web? We should tell people where they can go find it. Do you know?
I cannot tell you.
If you find it, send it off to me.
Yes, but it's Marcus Harvey.
Marcus Harvey.
It's probably in one of those websites where people can make dedications to perinatal law.
Very nice. I wanted to address an email because I think this kind of fits into what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's Beverly from New York, and she says, I saw you are going to talk about perinatal loss on the show. I carried twins for 5 months after conceiving them in vitro. It was emotionally difficult to lose the girls. We have a son, and my husband says we should stick with the family we have. I would like to try again. Do you have any suggestions?
Mm. Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyone who has to log in.
No. I think that, you know, when you asked me earlier about trauma, certainly this is yet another dimension of traumatic experience with perinatal loss, which is you go through a really grueling experience of getting pregnant through artificial technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy process. Those people who haven't been through it, it's hard to imagine really how demanding.
And it's also expensive. It's like $25,000.
Well, it's it's expensive, it takes emotional toll, it takes really a bodily toll. You're taking hormones, you're subjecting yourself to all kind of procedures. You have to do a lot of things that uncomfortable, embarrassing. It's a difficult process.
Well, also the fact that these babies were 5 months old.
Right.
You know, they were little people when she had them. So I assume the family, they were born, it looks like in New York City, so I imagine, you know, they were holding them and that kind of thing. So she doesn't say the one thing, how long it's been and how old she is. Those are questions, too.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in terms of trauma, that how traumatic, it adds to the traumatic dimension when you're going through the experience of getting pregnant through artificial technology, and then you lose that pregnancy.
Yeah, and I'm thinking also here that maybe her husband didn't get the support he needed. Maybe he needs to talk to somebody or get some support to talk about his experience.
And that's not an uncommon situation where people are not necessarily on the same page with how to proceed with further treatment.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult treatment, and it's like a roller coaster.
Uh-huh.
And so what I would say is that the important thing is to preserve their relationship and their communication about this matter, because if he's not on board, it will be very difficult to proceed from here on with another treatments and pregnancy if he is not totally supporting this pregnancy.
Yeah,
I would definitely suggest counseling, because they have one child, you said, right?
Yeah, they have one child.
You know, because I can actually relate to this in some ways, because after my infertility treatments and years of trying and the miscarriages, etc., my husband felt like we had one wonderful child and let's stop. And I was adamant that Alexander have a sibling, because my siblings have been so important to me, and it has been such a big part of my life, and losing a sibling was so devastating, and it created a lot of conflict in our relationship, and we had to go and get counseling to figure out how we were going to reach a compromise. It's hard to reach a compromise when one person wants a child and the other doesn't. There's no such thing as a half child.
Right. You need two for tango. You need two for pregnancy.
Right. So, you know, I've actually heard this among a lot of people that have had these kind of issues where all of a sudden one spouse will say, let's stop. Let's just stop. And the other one wants to proceed ahead.
That's one of the most common presenting problems that I see when I have couples coming in, which is one of them feels like they're going to go through yet another in vitro, and they're going to do whatever treatments are available out there, and they're not going to stop until they get pregnant, while the other one may feel very differently.
Right, and in my situation, I ended up adopting. Because the infertility route ended up being all consuming, and I ended up saying I need to stop now and think of another alternative.
Right, and you probably know how all consuming that can be. It takes
you know you feel
your
like
life.
You have a terminal illness, as you know, Lena. You feel it from. I mean, you feel like at some point I felt like, you know, I feel like I have a terminal illness.
Yeah, the endless appointments, the endless medications, the endless procedures. All of that contributes to that sense that it really takes over. I mean, women had said to me, I cannot make a decision about a vacation. I cannot make a decision about whether I want to take a path, a hobby, if I want to do anything else in my life, as minor as that can be, because I'm all consumed with only one thing, which is those treatments.
Right. So, If you're feeling badly about this, if you've had a perinatal loss, whatever, I think one of the things we really want to let folks know out there is that we know it's tough, and you also have the right to grieve, no matter if the baby was a month old or, a month in vitro, in utero or what, that people really do have a right, and dads also have a right to be sad, right?
Absolutely, and also if they have older children who knew, for example, that mommy was pregnant and they were excited perhaps about having a sibling, or maybe they were not excited, maybe they had a lot of other feelings about having a sibling, and then they find out that actually there's not going to be a sibling.
Yeah, when we come back from break, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think there's got to be some guilt with kids, because they have this magical thinking that maybe they did something to cause mommy to lose the baby, maybe they were too high demand or, you know, whatever, and those kind of myths that we get out there about what's happened. So we're coming up on break. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Please stay tuned to hear more from Lena Kaplan about perinatal loss. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com. We love to have you log in with your comments. We're getting great comments, great emails. We'd like to have you email us about shows that you'd like us to put on. You can also remember that all of our shows are archived on our blog. Stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley, co-host of Healing the Grieving Heart. When you've lost someone close to you, the holidays sometimes aren't as happy as they used to be. That's one of the reasons we created the Grief Blog. Visit www.thegriefblog.com and take advantage of the articles, stories, radio show archives, and comments all about dealing with loss. We'd love it if you'd share some of your holiday stories, poems, recipes, and traditions with our growing community of people just like you and just like me who've lost someone close to them. It's as easy as sending an email and a great way to remember and honor your loved one. Please tune in Thursdays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, to Healing the Grieving Heart on Voice America, and have a happy and safe holiday season.
Save the date. The Compassionate Friends 31st National Conference will be held July 18th through 20th, 2008, in the home of country music, Nashville, Tennessee. If you've experienced the devastating death of a child in your family, you will not want to miss the weekend of friendship, understanding, and hope, when more than 1,200 people just like you will join together. Said one person in describing last summer's 2007 National Conference, there was so much love and compassion, you could feel it in the air. To learn more about the 2008 National Conference, the pre-conference professional outreach day, and the popular 2-mile walk to remember, visit CompassionateFriends.org or call 877-969-0010. Detailed information on the conference will be posted to the national website as it becomes available.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're here today talking with Dr. Lena Kaplan about perinatal loss. Lena is a licensed clinical psychologist practicing in Los Angeles. She specializes in infertility and perinatal losses. Dr. Kaplan teaches psychology graduate students at Pepperdine University and medical students at UCLA. Welcome back to the show, Lena and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Lena, when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about siblings and that magical thinking.
Yes.
Do you have some thoughts about that?
Just to, again, not to minimize the loss of older siblings. Again, children oftentimes are being regarded as just children, and that's a whole, we can have a show on that in of itself. But in terms of the pregnancy, especially if it's a pregnancy that already was announced, people were talking mm-hmm. about it, if the sibling was talked about it in terms of expecting a brother or a sister, people were asking them about this upcoming sibling.
Yeah, especially if it goes on where the mother's got a big tummy.
Exactly. Or even if she didn't have a big tummy, but it was the concept that the tummy is growing, for example.
Yeah, yeah. Heidi, did Alexander, did you have any response around that?
Yeah. Well, you know, kids know a lot more than you think they know because they hear things in the house. And we had been going through all this infertility, and I had a couple of miscarriages. And so he started...
Now, say how old he was at the time.
I started trying to get pregnant when he was 4, and I ended up, it was about a four-year process. So 4 or 5, 6, about 4, 5, and 6, he started telling people one day, I can't remember how old he was, maybe 4 or 5, that I was pregnant with baby Nancy. I don't know where he came up with this, and it wasn't true. So all of a sudden, people started asking me if I was pregnant with a little girl named Nancy, and it was a little embarrassing, but it made me realize that he was a lot more aware of what was going on than I gave him credit for at that
mm-hmm.
time.
Right. Mm-hmm. And as we know, children have mixed feelings about having a sibling. It can
right.
be, on one hand, very exciting, and it's very thrilling. At the same time, children developmentally, depends on how old they are, have all kind of other ideas about as to why mommy and daddy decided to have yet another baby.
Mm-hmm.
So when that baby ultimately does not arrive, and the child understands that something went wrong, or mommy is sick, and the baby is no longer with us, and that creates a lot of anxiety about just what happened and how their own magical thinking had anything to do with this tragedy.
Now, what would you suggest that a parent say to their child right now if they've had a miscarriage or, you know, lost a child at birth or whatever? What would you say to
their
children?
Well, certainly the parents need to take into account the circumstances of the loss as well as how old is the child. And to be as simple as possible, I think that we oftentimes go from one extreme to another. Either we don't say anything or we elaborate on philosophical terms when the child actually needs to know something really very simple, which is mommy was pregnant. The pregnancy did not develop, or the pregnancy was discontinued. Mommy is not going to have a baby, or, you know, mommy is not going to have a baby at this time. Depends on how old the child is and an understanding of what death and loss may actually be.
And now, what would you say to a teenager?
Well, teenagers certainly understand more, and they have more capacity for abstract thinking. They have more understanding of the reproductive system. So you can talk with them a bit more extensively about maybe what happened, if you know what happened, because if you just had a miscarriage and there's no one good explanation for that, then that's just what you say. I mean, they have more terminology they can understand about those issues.
But maybe not too much information, even to them.
Yeah, again, depends on really what did happen, and depends on how, you know, how old is the adolescent and their own, where they are in on their lives.
And I'm also thinking maybe a comment about the fact that they may have felt, you know, they have lost a sibling. I don't know, Heidi, what's your thought on how would you, you know, do you feel like it's a loss of a sibling too? It sounds like the girl in your group felt that way, certainly.
She did. I guess it depends. I think that Lena would agree with this on how attached they felt to the pregnancy and to the child and how much the pregnancy was incorporated into the family. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my situation, I lost my pregnancies in the first trimester, so Alexander didn't really have an understanding of actually having a sibling loss, I don't think.
Right. But if it was a full pregnancy and you
right.
had a stillbirth or you had a genetic anomaly that led to the loss, then certainly they know that something was there that was growing, that was alive, and that is no longer there.
Absolutely.
And certainly families who choose to have certain rituals, which, you know, many people nowadays choose to do
mm-hmm.
To help with the grieving process, then if the child is old enough, certainly adolescents can take some part in it.
Talk about some of the rituals that you've seen people do, because our audience loves to get some ideas of some things that they can do.
You know, people do everything from something very private and meaningful, maybe just for the two people, or they, in situations such as stillbirth, they may have a full burial with a ritual, depends on their cultural and religious background. And I think that especially in situations like stillbirth, in the past, the medical community was very much against parents seeing the child and holding the child. But nowadays, there's much more support around that to mm-hmm. really treat it as any other death in which we can have a ceremony and we can have a religious quality to it if we're interested in. But there's no one ritual that I, you know, can recommend. It really depends on the circumstances.
On your own culture, but would you consider that rituals are healing and can be a good thing for people?
Yeah, I think they're great. And I've also seen people create little shrines with little baby mm-hmm. boots And, you know, if they don't have a photo, they don't need a photo to create a little shrine, a little candle, some little baby things where they can just go and remember the baby.
Okay,
just to add, Gloria, is that, you know, that's yet another reason why this is such a unique loss, in that we don't have oftentimes rituals for this. I mean, we don't even have a Hallmark card, for that matter. For Hallmark has cards for everything under the sun, but we don't have for that. And many people, depends on the nature of the loss, don't have something concrete as a grave site. And that's why there are many websites that were created to meet that need, where people can do something to remember, to have something to indicate that there was a soul and is no longer. So, for example, Born Angels, that's one place where people can do that. But I think it's really out of the need to have some process, some ritual, something to
some acknowledgement,
to remember the baby.
You know, that gets me to another email from Ron from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And Ron says, my mother told me about your blog and suggested I write in. My wife, Shelley, who's 35, miscarried after 2 months. It's been 4 months and she's still talking about the baby. Is this normal? I just think we should get on with it and try again. We're not getting any younger. That's a very interesting email to me, because I think it says something about, there are a lot of things in it, but there's also the idea that if you have a miscarriage, we can just go do another one, you know.
And it also goes back to, you know, we talked a little bit about differences between men and women, and kind of generally speaking, men are much better at being able to move on. They want to fix the situation. They want to do something to make their partner, to make their wife feel better. So, honey, if another baby would make you happy, let's just work on the baby.
I think that's a good point, because men do, they hate to see their wife suffer. I've noticed that at Compassionate Friends things. Have you, Heidi?
Absolutely. And I was thinking along this line is, society does so many things to interrupt our grief when we've had pregnancy loss, such as saying, well, at least you know you can get pregnant. Or, well, why don't you just go and get pregnant again and have another baby?
Right. Or people say things really out of maybe good intentions, but are very devastating and very hurtful to the person who had the loss, such as, it must have been for a good reason. Well, for a grieving parent, there's really not a good reason to lose their child. Or, you know, you're young, you can try again, as if that means that it can replace the previous loss and the previous baby.
You know, I wanted to just make sure we didn't cut Ron off, because I wanted to thank him for the email. And I also wanted to thank Beverly from New York, and we love your emails. Please keep sending them. But I also wanted to say, he wants to know, she had the miscarriage after. First of all, I think it's wonderful that Ron's mother is the one that said to go into the blog and look at it. I thought that was very nice, because I think men need to connect more with people out there and their mothers. And he says, she miscarried after 2 months. It's been 4 months, and is that normal? I'd say it's pretty early, wouldn't you?
I think that there's no normal or abnormal to the grieving process. And maybe that's the most important point, is that people do grieve differently. The meaning that they attach to the loss is different. This loss may stir up for her different than previous losses, which is not the case for him. So it will be really important to realize that they may not grieve the same.
Right.
And also, women aren't only emotionally recovering, they're physically recovering.
Right. I think that's two months. Yeah.
She might not be ready to get pregnant again. It takes a physical toll on your body to be pregnant.
Yeah.
And for many women, there's experience of certain particular guilt or shame, even, to try and get pregnant again, as if in their minds that means that they forgot or they minimized themselves their previous baby and the previous loss.
Oh, that's an interesting
point.
So that's something to just to keep in mind, that, I mean, I've had women who were telling me that not only that they cannot imagine getting pregnant right now, they cannot imagine even being sexual at the moment, because that's associated with potentially being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And they still very much grieving and dealing with the loss of the previous pregnancy. I don't want to erase that very quickly.
And how do you deal with that? Because I'm sure our audience is having some sexual issues out there around this kind of thing, because sexuality does kind of is connected up with reproduction.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think that goes back to the email that you just read from Ron, which is, you know, she may not be ready, and it's important to realize that oftentimes in a relationship we're not on the same page on many issues, including this one, which is huge, and that for her 4 months is a very short period of time to really recover from.
It's actually only, it's been 4 months, you're right. Okay,
and get
yeah.
back to life. Now, sexuality, it's not just reproduction, it's also connection with life, and life energy and vitality, and if she's still mourning, if she's still depressed, if she's still angry, upset, distraught, a whole gamut of feelings, that may not be a good place to feel sexual for her.
Yeah, one of the things I usually suggest to people is that they start out very slowly. If guys are feeling, if they're having, they're kind of stuck there, is there other things sexually, you know, putting your arm around somebody, you know, hugging them, taking them out to dinner, those kind of things, and kind of move things along a little bit with patients.
I think you're making a good point, because I think touch is very important, but it doesn't have to lead to sex.
Right.
But just touch in itself is important.
Right. But I think it's also important for women to understand that if your partner wants to be sexual, that also does not imply that he is not grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality can also be used as a way of connecting, as being close to somebody, to feel a shared experience. And for different people, sexuality can be very healing and very a way of connecting to something emotionally. And so just because one of them is able and wants to be sexual does not mean that they forgot the loss, they don't care about the loss, they're not really grieving.
Right. And the idea of ritual can also help you to compartmentalize those things, you know, where you can set up a candle, do a ritual so that you've really, you know, we're grieving now, that works for some people, and now we're going to go out to dinner and, you know. So that might be a thought. Well, we're coming up on break, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Please stay tuned to hear more from about perinatal loss. If you'd like to email us, you can email us through our blog, thebriefblog.com. Remember, all these shows are archived on our website. Stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley telling you about CARA's Camp Erin. Camp Erin is coming to the Bay Area. It's for children 6 to 17 who are grieving the death of a child, a family member, or a friend. Funded by the Moyer Foundation, that's M-O-Y-E-R Foundation, the camp combines fun, high-energy activities with grief education and emotional support. The camp will take place May 16th through May 18th, 2008, at Camp Eraro in Livermore. There is no cost to families to participate. Applications are due by February 5th and can be found online by visiting www.cara-grief.org or by calling the CARA, that's K-A-R-A, office at 650-321-5272. That's 650-321-5272. You can also check out information about the camp at our blog, thegriefblog.com.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. When you're not listening to our show every Thursday at 9 Pacific, noon Eastern, visit our new blog at thegriefblog.com. It's loaded with articles, personal stories, poems, and more. Our blog is dedicated to helping you and your family deal with loss. While you're there, submit your loved one's favorite recipes, your poems, and stories, and listen to our archives of our past shows. Thegriefblog.com is where you'll find us. And, of course, listen to our show every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, here on Voice America.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're here today talking with Dr. Lena Kaplan about perinatal loss. Lena is a licensed clinical psychologist practicing in Los Angeles who specializes in infertility and perinatal losses. Welcome back to the show, Lena and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Lena, this is our last break, and I wanted to make sure before we end the show to talk a little bit about you're in Los Angeles, and you're in private practice there, correct?
Yes.
And how would people get in touch with you?
People get in touch with me either via email. It's Dr. Lena Kaplan, Dr. Dr. Lena Kaplan, LinaKaplan, all in one word, at AOL.com. Or my number is 310-277-4305.
Hey, you want to say that number once more?
Sure, 310-277-4305.
And I just can't think of a better person if you've got these issues to see than Lena. And Lena, I wanted to talk a little bit. You mentioned the replacement child syndrome. Could you say a little bit about that?
Well, you know, the concept of replacement child syndrome actually originated after the Holocaust. Just briefly to mention the context of this syndrome is when a child is lost under traumatic or difficult circumstances. It obviously happened in many cases during the Holocaust. The parent, oftentimes the mother, feels the pressure to get pregnant again in order to replace, though obviously that's not necessarily the conscious thinking behind it, but just to have another child that would go on living and replace those who were deceased.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that this syndrome creates many, many potential difficulties for both the parents as well as that child who is born as a replacement child, and that this phenomenon repeats itself around issues of perinatal losses. So people oftentimes feel pressured, you know, I had a miscarriage, I had a stillbirth, I had a different kind of pregnancy loss. The best thing to do, which oftentimes we are told by physicians, we're told by people around us, is just to get pregnant again and have another child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that may not be the best recipe right away, because what happens is, and that's what oftentimes I see, is women who get pregnant immediately after the loss while they're still in the grieving process. And they are unable, oftentimes entirely unable, to attach themselves and to be connected to their current pregnancy and later on to their child.
So that could be a challenge for some of our folks out there. I think the number one thing to know is this is good information, and if you're having issues around that, you might want to get in touch with somebody to get some help and support around this. If you you may be feeling and you haven't known why, and it may have something to do with this. Well, what are some other common feelings?
I just want to chime in really quick and say,
okay.
And there are those of us who cannot get pregnant again, and it's not an option, and it will never happen. And we have to grieve that loss as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lena, could you give us some common feelings that people have that maybe our audience is having out there around perinatal loss?
Well, there's a whole gamut of feelings. I don't think that there is a feeling that people don't have. It depends when and in what context it may come up. But oftentimes we have strong feelings of guilt, self-blame, and shame. No matter what the physician or what the medical situation is, the woman especially oftentimes ends up feeling that she must have done something wrong or she is being punished for something that she had done in the past. It's usually can be seen as some protection against overwhelming feeling of powerlessness and overwhelming feeling of helplessness that we have around the loss, And we need, as human beings, to come up with some explanation as to why something as horrible as this happened to us,
mm-hmm.
even if it means taking on the blame for it.
Even like I remember you, Heidi, saying that you thought maybe you drank too much Diet Coke.
Right. You're wondering
right.
what you've done to cause this. Like,
but I think Lena makes a good point. It's really a way that we try to control our world.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think we get into maybe blaming doctors and hospitals and, you know, that kind of thing. We've got to find some reason.
Right, but that doesn't take away oftentimes from self-blame, especially if, you know, you can find something that can be magnified. So, for example, if you had, when you were very young, an abortion, then suddenly that abortion would become a core point that you would magnify to make it as a reason as to why now you had a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think those are really some mental issues that people probably need to get some help if they're feeling that way. What about our physical body? Is there something that we can do? I know you're a tango dancer, and there's nothing more demanding than that physically. It's almost a sport, isn't it?
It is a sport. I mean,
yeah.
It is demanding both mentally and physically. But I would say to people that, you know, do whatever it is that feels good to your body. It may be, I think dancing is incredible. It doesn't have to be tango. It can be any other form of dance that you like the music and you connect to that form of dance. It can be yoga. It can be jogging. It can be hiking. But do something for your body that really feels good to you, both athletically and then also experiences that are just nurturing, such as massages, that just taking care of the body instead of, which I oftentimes seen, being angry at your body and taking, mm-hmm. so to speak, some of your frustration and disappointment on your body by neglecting it.
Mm-hmm. How about food? Do you talk about food or drinking water or any of those aspects?
You know, I'm not a food expert, actually, but I would say that, again, just be good to yourself.
Yeah,
eat healthy, you know, take care of yourself. I mean, I think that it's hard to do when we are depressed, right? We either
mm-hmm.
overeat or we don't eat. So, and then if that's the case, then for time being, you may need to give yourself a break and realize, okay, all you want right now in the midst of this horrible period of time is Häagen-Dazs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you know, we can do only so much at any given time. So when we're grieving, it takes a lot of mental, physical, spiritual energy.
Absolutely. And getting into spiritual, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, again, I think it's like with dancing. You have to connect to something where you feel grounded, where it feels that it provides a measure of support, it provides a measure of nurturance, it provides some connection to yourself in a way that feels meaningful. And it can be different things for different people. For me, tango is a spiritual experience. But,
well, I've talked to many women that believe that since their babies had souls and that they will be reunited with them one day, and that gives them great comfort.
Absolutely. So it depends on what's your belief systems. Mm-hmm. And for some people, which is not unusual, that it's after such profound grief and loss, do they find their path back to spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
So that might be, for many people, one way to cope with the loss is by reconnecting maybe with some spiritual experience that, you know, a spiritual practice that they haven't had in a while.
Right. Well, I think that the points that we've made on this show, they're really important ones, and the points that you've made on the show, Lena, I'm thinking that one of the most important points is that you have a right to grieve.
Absolutely. And to claim it.
And
I
claim
think, you
your
know,
grief.
If I could help, you know, people to really have their voice and be assertive when they hear comments that are not sensitive to their grief,
mm-hmm.
such as, well, you know, it has been now a few months, why don't you just get pregnant again?
Mm-hmm.
And how wonderful it can be if instead of feeling bad about that comment and that maybe we should get pregnant and something is wrong with us, we could actually have a voice and say, I'm still grieving. This is my loss.
Mm-hmm. And take control of it and claim it. Heidi, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think those are wonderful words of wisdom. I would just second that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So So be willing to claim your grief and be patient with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Physical exercise is good. Make sure you eat right. Realize that sometimes you have to educate your community, don't you? And I know that that's what you're doing out there, Lena.
You become an ambassador of sorts.
Mm,
I think that's
what I
hear oftentimes from women who've been through perinatal loss. They feel that they become ambassadors for education, not on any massive level, but just on a personal level with encounters with people who really have the best of intentions, but very much limited in their understanding and their capacity to empathize with this kind of a loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't do very well with abstract losses.
Mm-hmm. And people can go on the internet and there are perinatal loss organizations.
Many organizations.
That can help you out. You can find some in your community.
There's blogs and there's resources and there's sites for remembering the losses and the babies. There's sites for grandparents. I mean, there's really a lot of sites.
A lot going on. And also, if you want some feet on the ground and to do something, you can get in touch with your local hospital. I'm sure they have groups going on that you might be able to help out with, or your church. There, and look in your community for grief groups. You can go to Compassionate Friends. And also, I'm very far out in my grief with Compassionate Friends, but I do that as a support for other people. So there are lots of opportunities for service out there also.
Absolutely, and support can be so profound in this around this experience.
And don't forget the you know, we're talking as women here, but don't forget the guys out there. You can get out and get help too, and
absolutely
encourage your husband to do it. It has been, or your boyfriend or whoever, your significant other, because it has been their loss also.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and it's time for us to close the show today. We want to thank Lena Kaplan for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
And it's been great having you on. And next week we're going to have the topic, Too Young to Be a Widow, and our guest is going to be Father Patrick Green and Beverly McManus. Beverly's husband, Steve, died, leaving her at age 43 with two children, and it's a heart-rending story of how Father Patrick has helped her through this grieving process. This show is archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. We're on Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard Time, live, and 12 Eastern. Stay tuned for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope, renewal, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Lena, thank you for all you are doing for those of us who are grieving a miscarriage or a perinatal loss. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.